Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It is great to have with us a man I admire as highly as anyone I know in Washington, D.C. His name is General William Jerry Boykin, Lieutenant General, United States Army, retired. He served with extraordinary distinction inside the Army for some 36 years, including in virtually all, if not in fact all, of our most elite Special Forces units, including as a founding member of Delta Force and its commander. He finished his distinguished service to the country, at least to date, as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence under President George W. Bush. He is a dear friend. He works these days as the executive vice president at the Family Research Council and is an extraordinary ally in the war for the free world, and I couldn't be more pleased to have him with us. General Boykin, welcome back, sir. Happy New Year to you.
Hey, the same to you, Frank. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Thank you, sir. Let me ask you first, General, to talk about what's going on. I don't mean necessarily in terms of the detailed mechanics, but just in terms of the impact on the morale and the, well, the fighting trim, I guess you might say, of the United States military as we go through this government shutdown that is impacting them, among others.
You know, Frank, anytime you go into a hostile environment, you go into combat, you go into conflict of any kind, one of the most important things to every soldier, sailor, airman, and Marines is to know that the people of America are behind you. And now you see that the people that represent us in Congress, the very people that are making important decisions that impact the lives of every military person, they are in such disarray that they have now, quote, shut down the government. That's very, very demoralizing. From a more practical perspective also, though, you know, you can't commit to any long-term programs. You're planning your strategic plans and the materiel that you need to execute those strategic plans. You can't make a long-term commitment when the government has been shut down. So it sets our readiness back and demoralizes our troops.
Yeah. And General, as a career military man, you've doubtless been monitoring closely what is the state of readiness of your service, the Army, and others. Do you share the sorts of concerns that we talk about a lot here, that we're in a desperate straits in terms of our warfighting capabilities in a dangerous time in our country's history?
Yeah, of course I do. Look, I think that you got to give Donald Trump credit that he released his commanders and let them go after ISIS and gave them rules of engagement that would support being able to do exactly what they've done, which is they really hurt ISIS. They've set them back, but ISIS is not going away. That said, I think that you also need to reflect on the fact that our military is down to pre-World War II levels between sequestration and program budget cuts. We've got a military now that is not able to sustain itself, particularly when you talk about airplanes and ships and tanks and artillery and those types of major end items that require a lot of maintenance and a lot of spare parts. Our budget has not allowed us to have the spare parts and the maintenance capabilities that are necessary for total readiness, and that's why you hear reports, which are true, of having to go to boneyards or museums to get airplane parts to keep our current fleets flying. And look, I think Trump is very sensitive about that, and that's why he's asked for, I think, about $800 billion in military budget. But again, not only do we not have an appropriations bill, but we've got a government shutdown, which means you really have to question the efficiency and the focus of the members of Congress right now, particularly those on the Democratic side.
Yeah, amen. General, speaking of readiness of our armed forces, you have joined General Meese, former Attorney General of the United States, and several others of us late last year in urging the president to stay the course in terms of his efforts to prevent transgender individuals from serving in the armed forces, and specifically to get a stay on these various lower court rules saying that he has to begin admitting them into the military. That advice has not yet been taken, alas, but just remind us, sir, as to why it is important, as you see it, that those sorts of folks with gender dysphoria, as it's called, be excluded from service in the armed forces.
Well, the first question that Congress and the president need to ask himself before they make any decisions regarding the military is, how does this enhance readiness? Now, if you can't demonstrate that it enhances readiness, then you shouldn't do it. And nobody's made any case that allowing transgenders to serve would enhance readiness, particularly at a time like this when our readiness is already low due to budget cuts. You can't make the case. That's why it hasn't been made. You can't make a case that a person coming in the military that either self-identifies as transgender or has been diagnosed with gender dysphoria is going to enhance readiness when you know there's going to be a period of time that they're not going to be deployable because they're either going through some kind of surgery or they're going through part of their hormone therapy or they're going through part of the whole process. They're going to be out of the force. They're not going to be deployable. Show me how that enhances readiness. And that's what General Meese and I and a group of others have stayed very focused on. And quite frankly, Frank, you've been right in the middle of that and very, very helpful and quite aggressive on this issue. Nobody in America has a constitutional right to serve in the military. Now, I'm going to say that again. Nobody has a constitutional right to serve in the military. My son was rejected because at 12 years old, he took Adderall for ADD, and he was rejected for entry into the military services. So how can there be any equity in the fact that now someone can come in saying, I've been diagnosed with gender dysphoria, or I self-identify as a transgender, and how can they then get in the military knowing that they're going to go on hormone therapy, and at some point they're probably going to ask for reorientation surgery? That is illogical. It does not contribute to readiness. And this is one of those common sense things that took a lot of courage for Donald Trump to say, this is not going to happen. And now you've got judges, unelected judges, commanding our military because they just usurped the authority and the power, constitutional power, of the President of the United States.
Article 2, absolutely right. General, I mentioned that you served as a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, and I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about perhaps the most notorious transgender individual in modern American history, Chelsea Manning, who has been pardoned by President Obama for the crimes that she committed to did huge damage, as I understand it, to our intelligence community. Also, but I'd ask you to address the fact that Linda Sarsour, a prominent Sharia supremacist, has endorsed Chelsea Manning for her bid for the United States Senate for Maryland. Your thoughts, sir?
Keep in mind that Barack Obama pardoned him like his last week in office. He was into a 35-year prison sentence for the largest release of classified information in American history. Here's a guy that betrayed his country, a guy that after having taken an oath of fidelity to his country, he betrayed his country, and then he was pardoned. And now he's going to run for Senate and is being endorsed by the nefarious elements like Linda Sarsour, who would bring Sharia to America tomorrow if she had the opportunity. And this guy's going to run for the Senate, and this is what I say to people. Here's a guy Here's a woman, I'm supposed to call her. Here's a woman who took an oath of fidelity to the American Constitution and then turned around and betrayed it. So now this person wants to take an oath of fidelity to the American Constitution a second time, and I would ask, how did it work out the first time?
A very good question. General Boykin, as always, your insights as well as your leadership on all these matters is extraordinarily important and deeply appreciated. Thank you, sir, for taking a little time to talk about them. Come back to us again often, I hope, in 2018.
to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.